God gave the Israelites a new proverb to replace the one they had crafted for themselves. They said, "The days are long and every vision fails." God taught them to say, "The day draws near as well as the fulfillment of every vision." There are lessons here for us. Mostly so obvious I shouldn't have to say them. As God has spoken, so will He do.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to say thanks for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church podcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This podcast can be found on iTunes by searching for Terry Bailey Ministries in the iTunes store, where you can also subscribe to the podcast and get the weekly message sent automatically to you by clicking the subscribe button. Right now, let's get back to Pastor Terry as he preaches this week's insightful message.
Good morning. I will apologize in advance by the clock on the 8 o'clock service. This sermon is a lot longer in practice than it was in my head as I conceived it. We ran a bit over. Do my best. How many of you have found yourself in the situation where you are standing knee-deep in the ruin of decisions that you have made and had to say to yourself, "Well, I was told it would end up this way"? Yeah. Makes it worse when you know that you were warned and somehow you came here to this point. Anyway, I love the book of Ezekiel. I've always thought that it is far too big a book for me to undertake to preach it as a series. It would just take years. We had a good time following just one limited thing through the book of Ezekiel in the breakfast Bible study a while back, and I like to come back to it at least for a sermon every once in a while. But for me to be able to expound properly what Ezekiel said in the verses that Scott read for us this morning, I think that first I need to follow one particular thread of the Old Testament story through that leads up to this point, so bear with me. The Israelites asked for a king, and God told them it was a bad idea. And Samuel, who was judge and prophet for that generation, felt personally crushed because the request for a king stood as a rebuke of and a rejection of his labors and his ministry. And God made a point of saying to Samuel, "It's not you they're rejecting. It's me." And of course, part of the message to Samuel in that is, whatever everybody else does, you keep walking with me. But God told them the king was a bad idea. And He told them why. He listed some of the things that kings always do and always will do that turn out to be bad for the people. And then He cut to the heart of the matter. The real point is this. It was a fear-based request. The Israelites looked around and they saw all the big scary nations around them all had big scary kings, larger than life individuals who were decked out in regalia and who could point at some place and say the word, and hordes of armed men would descend on them and wreak havoc. Those guys were scary, those kings. We'd feel safer if we had one too. We want our own big scary guy to take care of us. And of course, the real thing was for them just to walk with God. Trust God. Let God take care of them. But no, want a big scary king like all the other big scary nations. And God gave them a king. And God did a number of things with this. He did not change his mind about it being a bad idea, but he did set it up in a way so that it would show what he was really about. And when Jesus Christ came into the world, he came in the house and the lineage of David, the king, to restore and make eternal that throne which was temporary, on which David sat. God did that. God also sent prophets who would interact with each king. David had Nathan, and Ahab had Elijah, and Hezekiah had Isaiah. And so it was prophets who interacted with each and every one of the kings. And the prophets had a core message, which was not changed from the days in Samuel when they first asked for a king. Look, the real thing is to walk with me, walk with God, and I will keep you safe from all these big scary nations around you. If your king is a good shepherd and walks with me, he will have victory. Let them come individually. Let them come all at once. It won't matter. If your king is a good shepherd and walks with me, I will keep you safe. If you are a nation that walks with me, I will keep you safe. If you walk away from me, you will fall prey to all the big scary nations about which you are so worried. This was the core message, the core interaction between prophets and kings. And the relations were more or less friendly, depending on how well that message was received by the king. Saul, the first king, ended up misleading the flock. And his head and the heads of his sons ended up fastened to the wall of the city of residence of one of those other big scary kings of the big scary nations. David did better, though he had his ups and downs. Solomon started well, had a challenging finish. And in the fourth generation, the kingdom broke. And the northern half, which called itself Israel, immediately abandoned God, set up a competing temple with a competing priesthood, and worshiped the false gods of the nations, the big scary nations around. And had a series of kings whose lives were mostly summed up by the single phrase, and they did evil in the sight of the Lord. The kingdom of Israel lasted about 200 years, with prophets in every generation repeating their core message, walk with God and be safe, which was pretty much ignored. And at the end of the two centuries of their time, Israel was annihilated by the big scary Assyrians. Southern kingdom, Judah, had a little better record. And there were some pretty good kings in there. There were some bad ones too, but there were some good ones. But the hearts of the people slowly shifted with the bad kings. They went on for about almost another 200 years after the fall of Israel. And just a little bit past the midline of that extended time that Judah got, the prophets began to sharpen up the message. Isaiah would name the Babylonians as the particular big scary nation that was going to be responsible for administering punishment should Israel not clean up its act and start walking with God again. Nebuchadnezzar would be the name. He wasn't even born yet, but it would be the name of the king, the big scary king of the big scary nation of Babylon, who would come and who would administer the wrath of God if you don't clean up your act and walk with me again. Jeremiah made the message even sharper and proclaimed that it was imminent, and we were at the very last moment. We walk with God or the punishment by Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians is inevitable. And the message was ignored. Well, mostly. During the ministry of Isaiah, King Hezekiah took the message to heart and set out to restore the nation's walk with God. But on his death, his son could hardly wait to undo all the work that he had done. So his grandson, Josiah, did it again, attempting to restore the nation's walk with God. And Josiah did well, except at the end he ignored the prophetic advice that he was given not to involve himself in another thing that God was doing. God was using the big scary Egyptians under their big scary King Necho to punish a different people, not the people of Judah. And Josiah was warned prophetically, just stay out of this. This is the hand of God at work. And Josiah did not heed that device and involved himself and was shot with an arrow and died too young, too early. And his son also could not wait to undo all the good work that his father had done. He led Israel astray. And Israel was so easily led astray that Joahaz, Josiah's son, Joahaz, managed to turn things around even though he only reigned for 3 months. In one quarter of 1 year, this evil king led the nation astray again. And then Egypt showed up at his doorstep, and Joahaz was deposed, and Judah was put under tribute to Egypt, which was to say, you are free to do as you like as long as a certain amount of gold shows up across the river every year. And we will assign the new king, Jehoiakim, who was on the throne under Egyptian management. He reigned for 11 years, doing evil in the sight of the Lord. And now we begin to come to it. The big scary Babylonians, exactly as prophesied, led by Nebuchadnezzar, exactly as prophesied, showed up exactly as prophesied. This became the first wave of the Babylonian captivity. Jehoiakim, along with a fair amount of treasure, and with a good chunk of the population, those that the Babylonians considered the best and brightest, were hauled away to Babylon. In this captivity, the soon-to-be prophet statesman Daniel went. And Jehoiakim's 8-year-old son, Jehoiachin, was put on the throne under Babylonian management. And even though he reigned a very short time, he managed to do evil in the sight of the Lord. And at the end of his short reign, Jehoiachin, along with more treasure and more people, were carted off to Babylon. This is the second wave. And in this wave, the priest, soon to be prophet, Ezekiel, went. Daniel's ministry, beginning in the first wave, was to be in the palace, which is not to say that it was always easy. There was that lion's den, after all. Ezekiel went in the second wave, and his ministry was in the slave colony on the banks of the Chebar Canal, filling barges with goods to be shipped up and down the Euphrates River for their Babylonian masters. And we come to the last king of Judah, Zedekiah. Now, I want to do this here. These last five kings, we neglect this part of the story often and we fail to understand it. So let's get this under our belt. It's not that hard to remember. There are only five of them. They are Josiah, Joahaz, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah. You ready? Say Josiah. Say Joahaz, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah. I have a reason for wanting you to know the names. I will come to that in a little bit. Zedekiah was put on the throne of Judah under Babylonian management. And he sought to save the day with an idea as old as the Exodus under Moses. He said, let's go back to Egypt. Not, let's go back to God, as Jeremiah kept warning him ought to be done. Let's go back to Egypt. Let's back it up a generation or two to the good old days when all we had to do was shovel enough gold across the Nile River and Egypt kept us safe. Let's go back to that. Let's pay the big scary Egyptians and their big scary king to protect us from the big scary Babylonians and their big scary king. Let's do that rather than setting out to walk with God again. Prophet Jeremiah warned him that this was a bad plan. Zedekiah tried it anyway. And his attempted rebellion against Babylon by seeking to pay Egypt for protection failed. Nebuchadnezzar came back a third time, and he destroyed Jerusalem from one end to the other. He leveled Temple of God to its foundations. And he deported huge numbers of Jews, especially the men, to further slave labor operations. And he brought in members of other populations from here and there that he had conquered to be forcibly mixed with the Jewish population. You don't understand this until you have tried to consider it for a moment in personal terms. What it would mean is that guys like Jake are shipped off to be slaves, and your wife and your children are given to foreigners, brought in for the purpose to completely erase your religious and national heritage. You can't understand it until you put your name to it and consider that a guy like Philip would be shipped off to slavery and his family given to a foreign stranger so as to destroy every last vestige of their godly history. These things Nebuchadnezzar did. In the third and final wave of the Babylonian captivity. Side name. Remember the names of those kings? Did it just a minute ago. Josiah, Joahaz, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah. Here's the interesting thing. All their names mean essentially the same thing. If you just translate the words of which their names are composed, they all mean essentially the same thing. But there is a subtle shift as you go through these last generations of the kings of Judah. Josiah means established by God, built by God. And each name means almost the same thing, but they slowly, subtly shift until you get to Zedekiah, which means God is setting things up. You understand the difference? Established by God to God is setting things up. And he was. All that said, I am ready now for what Ezekiel had to say. There were 11 years between the second and third waves, the waves in which Ezekiel was carried away to the slave labor camp, and the final wave in which Jerusalem was destroyed. During those 11 years, the first 11 years of Ezekiel's prophetic ministry, Jerusalem still stood. And during this 11 years, the Jews among whom he labored prophetically had this proverb which they repeated regularly, which was, "The days are long and every vision fails." I want you to say that with me just to feel the words tripping off your tongue. Are you ready? The days are long and every vision fails. I mean, it sounds like despair, doesn't it? I mean, don't those words feel like despair coming out of your mouth? But that was not how the Israelites spoke them. For them, it was a declaration of hope, a declaration of defiance. What they meant was this: we have all heard what the prophets said. Every generation of us, every individual among us have all heard what the prophets said. We know that if we didn't walk with God, we would fall prey to the big scary nations. We know that it got sharpened up under Isaiah to include the nation of Babylon and the king Nebuchadnezzar. We know what Jeremiah said shortly before we ended up here in this slave labor camp. We know we have heard it. All. We have heard it all of our lives. But it's been a long time. Days are long. And none of what the prophet said has come true. All their visions failed. So we don't have to worry about what those fussy, killjoy, gloom and doom prophets said. My first reaction to this is, what? You seriously mean to tell me that the northern kingdom fell to the Assyrians? Well, yeah, but we didn't like those guys anyway. You seriously mean to tell me that here you are in a slave labor camp, loading barges, learning to speak Babylonian, the Babylonians who, just exactly as was prophesied under the king whose name was told before he was born, Nebuchadnezzar, came and put this hurting on you, and yet you mean to tell me it is your considered opinion that the visions of the prophets have failed? Well, yes, because Jerusalem is still standing. And we have a king there. We wanted these big scary kings, see, to feel safe. And we still have one. And he's still got an army. And he's still holed up there behind the walls of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem will prevail. And when good old Zedekiah and Jerusalem wins this war, because that is our national heritage after all, we're all going home. Just a couple of months. You'll see. So there, Jeremiah, Isaiah, and Ezekiel, your visions fail because Jerusalem still stands. One of the major thrusts of the prophet Ezekiel was to declare this hope false. And Ezekiel's ministry was unusual. He is called the silent prophet because the terms God laid upon him was that he wasn't allowed to preach with words. He had to give kind of pantomime and object lessons until Jerusalem fell. We should try that sometime for the sermon, right? Well, we'll see. In this chapter, if you read, Ezekiel packed up all his stuff and set it outside the little mud hut in which he lived as one of the captive slaves on the canal. Packed it all up and set it outside in the bright light of day as though he were ready to go on a long journey. And then he went back into his little mud hut and he dug a hole in the wall at the back of it to be like an escape hatch that he could dart out really quick. And he didn't get to explain this because that wasn't the way his ministry worked. What it meant was this. Zedekiah told the people he was with them to the bitter end. Where you go, I will be with you. Like he had his bags all packed out for whatever journey arose. But in the meantime, he was preparing his secret escape hatch so that when the war went badly, as it became increasingly clear that it was going to do, he would bolt with the money collected from the peoples whom he was abandoning and seek to use that money to pay the king of Egypt to keep him safe there in the land of Egypt. Sorry about your bad luck, guys. I'm out of here with your money. That was Zedekiah's plan. I will let you research it for yourself. I'll just tell you the short version. Zedekiah's secret escape plan did not work. But you can look that up for yourselves. He set them up as per his name. The days are long, and every vision fails. We know what the prophet said, but we don't want to believe it. Despite the fact that almost all of it has already come to pass right in front of our eyes, everything but the actual final destruction of Jerusalem, despite that all of that has already played out in front of us, we don't want to believe it. Despite the fact that we are living in this slave labor camp in Babylon, we don't want to believe it. We refuse to concede that God was correct in the visions that he gave to the prophets. The days are long. Judah has been around for 400 years. 400 years! We have a proud lineage and cultural history that stretches back 400 years. What? You think you can just wave your hand and make all that go away? We've got a big line of kings coming down to our current kings. You think you're just going to overthrow that with a word? We got these big massive walls around the city of Jerusalem. What? You're just going to knock them down? Well, as it turns out, yeah, pretty much. 400 years is a blink of the eye to God. And the fact that He has waited so long might instruct you about His patience rather than cause you to feel that He is powerless. And the walls of Jerusalem might as well have been made of tissue paper. And the kings in which you put so much trust, for the last several generations, God has been shifting the meaning of their names from God establishes to God is setting things up. Before the ministry of Ezekiel was over, the first refugee bearing the news arrived. Jerusalem is destroyed. Zedekiah, the last king of Judah, is dead. And our kingdom is no more. The vision of the prophets has come to pass. God gave the Israelites a new proverb to replace the one they had crafted for themselves. They said, "The days are long and every vision fails." God taught them to say, "The day draws near as well as the fulfillment of every vision." There are lessons here for us. Mostly so obvious I shouldn't have to say them. As God has spoken, so will He do. The vision will find fulfillment. And those earthly institutions and powers to which we look to protect us instead of walking with God for our peace and our safety, those institutions and powers will only end up becoming the mechanism, the stages by means of which God brings about the fulfillment of the vision. America's been around for a while now, not as long as Judah was, but a while. And we have some power and some institutions in which we have learned to trust, but we need to remember a time we were smarter and we wrote on the money, "In God we trust." And we meant it. Because if the Lord does not build the house, they labor in vain who build it at all, for what He has not built, He will knock down. I should think that the barest glance at things currently happening in our society should tell us that everything God said has always been true. And that it is playing out right in front of our eyes, coming to pass as He said that it would. Still, despite this, it took the destruction of Jerusalem to teach the Jews the folly of their proverb. Let us choose a wiser course. Walk with me and be safe. Or walk away from me and fall prey to all the big scary powers of the world. This remains our choice.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our faithful listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church podcast. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.